Joe here in studio. Joining me today, former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, former Governor and former Ambassador Nikki Haley. Now, am I allowed to? Can I tell him your dream job?
Sure.
And so you told us when you get out of politics, you want to be a DJ, not a talk show host, but an actual music DJ on the radio. So like that was a perfect intro song, The Temptations, My Girl. That's where I got started.
I love music. I have always loved music since I was a kid, and my husband has always laughed because he knows I'm going to end up being a music DJ when all this is said and done.
Look, my dream, my wife and kids know this, when we've won enough of the battles and we actually have conservative leadership and philosophy throughout the land, my dream job, I want to retire in a beach community because I love the water. I want to do the morning show on a 50s and 60s station and then go hang out on the beach for the rest of the day. That's pretty much it.
You know, when I was governor of South Carolina, whenever we would pass legislation, like we required legislators have to show their votes on the record or whatever, I would blast Joan Jett throughout the state house during bill signings. It made everybody crazy, but it was just, I think that life is better when you have music in it.
So I totally agree. That's why we pick our bump music that we do. I want to give Rebecca the chance to answer the question, but just quickly, what is your favorite, what era of music, if you could pick blue sky, what would you DJ? What kind of music?
I mean, I love the 80s. I love 70s going into 80s into the first part of the 90s. That's my favorite, but I love all music. I mean,
disco or rock, though? You said 70s. I got to clarify there. This could be a deal breaker.
All of it. Oh, I love all of it. I mean, but you know, my first.
She's honest, at least.
My first concert was actually Poison opened up for Guns N' Roses. And
oh, my God. There was a lot of hair at that concert. And a lot of makeup.
The energy
I'd say.
In the room just shifted.
All right, so we went to
you
the break.
You have your Wisconsin cool card now.
Yeah, I mean, good choice. I mean, my first, this won't shock anyone in the audience, my first concert was the Beach Boys, because that's always been my favorite band.
So yeah, that would
people might have heard that I like the Beach Boys, but I did work with them eventually, too, so that was pretty cool. But all right, so the question before the break was, the first question of the evening was, why was it important for you to be at the debate last night? Why was that?
Because I actually care about the voters of the state of Wisconsin. Joe, I love this state, and I want to protect your family the same way I protect my family. I'm running for governor so that we can take back control and give it back to the people of Wisconsin. And the good news is I've done it before, and we have a record of being conservative reformers. I'm the only conservative reformer who is running for governor right now. It was important to be at the debate because the voters of Green Bay wanted to hear the ideas, the policy differences, and the hopes of these candidates for our state, but they also wanted to hear who was actually electable, who could actually beat Tony Evers. And uniquely, that's me.
Now, as we look at this, I mean, we always say this is the most consequential election. I feel like since pretty much 2000, every cycle that comes out, and it's not untrue because things change. We have bigger challenges, different challenges. 2022 is really a major election everywhere in this country. We have several governorships, U.S. senators. I mean, we have the potential, barring any major shenanigans, we have the potential to not only flip the House, the Senate, several governorships. I mean, a major shift. There's a lot of typical signs that say that's what's going to happen. I'm going to ask this to you, for you, Nikki. But yet we had in the Senate, we have Republicans giving in on red flag gun laws, these kinds of things. What's the prescription for actually succeeding? Because it seems like when they, we're working our way towards victory and people want to grab defeat from the jaws of victory. How do we stay the course? How do we get this done? And why in the world are so many Republicans always so willing to compromise?
So Republicans need to remember that, look, half the battle is winning the House, Senate, and, flipping some seats of the 36 governor's races. But the more important half of the battle is proving we deserve to be there when we win. And that's by putting solutions on the table, doing results. It's the reason why I like Rebecca Clayfish is because we know that she's already fought unions. We know that she sees that the economy is tough and that families are having to pay more at the gas station and, at the grocery store. And she's saying she's not going to allow any tax increases and she's going to cut taxes. We know that we see crime. She wants to put 1,000 1,000 more law enforcement people on the streets. We know that we've got a border issue out of control, and she's going to fight the border by sending the National Guard to the border to help, but she's also going to make sure drugs aren't coming into the state. We need fighters. We don't need people who are going to compromise, whether it's on the Second Amendment, who are going to compromise by spending wasteful things. You know, we've got right now $10 billion was recently passed, 5,000 earmarks by Republicans and Democrats in Congress. There are no saints in the room, but you know what there are? There's strong governors that are out there that are going to fight wasteful spending. She knows what it means to balance a budget. She knows what it means because she passed entitlement reform. She knows what it means to fight for Wisconsin families. And in a, you know, primaries are tough. But what you want at the end of the day is someone who can win a general and someone who's going to be true to what she promises she's going to do. And I know Rebecca Clayfish is that person.
And you mentioned immigration. We talked about this in the debate last night. I want to address, if you would, Rebecca, on this idea, I think, particularly states like Wisconsin, that the first, when people hear about immigration, they think southern states. But the fact of the matter is the immigration problem hurts everybody. Not, I mean, there's obviously such a nice term, resettling illegal immigrants in states like Wisconsin, certainly the drug problem. What, if you could kind of enumerate the issues it creates and how to solve that?
Yeah, but let's be really clear here. We as conservatives, we as Republicans embrace legal immigration. We want more people here to add to the vibrancy of our economy. That's good. What we don't want is illegal immigration. And to enumerate the problems it causes, you've got people here using our education system, using our welfare system, using our health care system, and unfortunately, using our criminal justice system because you have law enforcement problems. And we know that 95% of our illicit drugs are coming up over that southern border, a border that Tony Evers refused to protect. One of his very first actions as governor was to pull our National Guard troops off the border until Joe Biden told him to send them back there. One of the first things I'm going to do as governor is ban sanctuary cities, but then additionally assure that we join Operation Border Strike Force, which is basically a 10th Amendment, a states' rights way of doing the job the federal government under Joe Biden refuses to do, which is protect our states. You don't have to be a southern border state to feel the impacts of people dying of overdoses of fentanyl.
Well, and again, this goes to the next question, which again, for those that couldn't tune in, I asked this simple question. Is there a scenario in which you would sign into law a bill that would propose legalizing drugs, recreational drugs, and or medical, so-called medical, if it involves basically the usage of it being in what are considered traditional drug abuse ways? So we're not talking about, you know, getting oils that are distilled into liquid pills and those kind of things. We're talking about basically legalizing a bill where people can smoke a joint under the guise of medical assistance. Would that be something you'd be willing to support?
When you take a look at what recreational marijuana states have seen in their Medicaid bills, in their law enforcement bills, how it skyrocketed the use of drugs during driving, the problems that they have even at the borders of other states that don't use, their homelessness numbers, they've all skyrocketed. And all of these politicians who say, oh, this is going to make us so much money, let me remind everyone, government shouldn't be in the business of making money. Government should take as little from people as humanly possible and allow people to make their own individual decisions. People should be keeping more of their own money. People are protected by the Constitution for their own individual rights and liberties. Government shouldn't be trying to make money off of anything. And so that argument is complete fallacy. I will say this, you know, there have been a lot of veterans who have come to me and talked to me. And I have talked to them about the fact that when my father, and I talked about this last night, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, he was prescribed Marinol. Marinol is legal marijuana for cancer pain and chemo side effects in Wisconsin today. What I have been shocked by is how few people actually know that.
So it's kind of a solution seeking a problem when they're trying to propose that we need these bills.
Until law enforcement is involved in this conversation, You know, I think it's kind of a non-starter, Joe. I mean, law enforcement has chosen me as their candidate. I've been endorsed by the Wisconsin Fraternal Order of Police, the Kenosha Police Association Board, the Milwaukee Police Association, and more than half of Wisconsin's sheriffs. There is a reason they've picked me. It's because I've always had their back. From the time I was a watchdog reporter through when I was lieutenant governor to now when I am running for governor, pledging to put 1,000 more cops on the streets and do bail and sentencing reform. Until law enforcement is involved in this conversation, I don't think we can have an articulate conversation with the people of Wisconsin about legalizing pot. And so let's talk with law enforcement before we have any knee-jerk reaction and decide that we're going to become Colorado and make money off of dealing drugs.
No, which, and I've pointed out to the audience, one of the biggest money people behind the legalization of marijuana is actually the tobacco industry. So let that marinate in terms of the strategy that goes there. Now, you mentioned government, the role of government. As governor, what would you do? I think there's very few that would argue there's too little government right now. What would you do to effectively reduce the size of government in the state of Wisconsin, saving taxpayer dollars and more importantly, making sure they have their liberties and freedom intact?
Well, I said last night, we're going to have to pass some executive power reform. And listen, I'm talking to you as an original executive brancher here, but what we saw Tony Evers do during COVID-19 was atrocious. You heard the ambassador just say it. This was a moment for leadership in the United States of America. Some governors chose freedom and the Constitution, individual rights and liberties. Some governors chose to just toss the Constitution and steamroll people. And that was Tony Evers. We need to make sure that executive power is curtailed to the point where individual rights and liberties are not steamrolled. We also need to roll back the powers of county health departments. In De Pere, right here in your listening audience, you saw cops go out and bust up an outdoor church service? You know, this is First Amendment rights being trampled, and this is Tony Evers' weak and failed leadership. And so what we need to do is protect the Constitution, protect individual rights and liberties, and as governor, that's exactly what you're going to see me do.
We have a caller who wants to ask a question. Let's go to Rick. I don't have a line number. Hopefully you do. Rick in Hortonville. Good morning, Rick. How are you? No? Let's try again. Is he on the other line? I guess we don't have Rick in Hortonville. All right.
Hold on.
Do we? Yes, no. All right. I guess Rick is not there. Well, they wrote the question, so it said he was there. I apologize. Does Rebecca Clayfish support any sort of unions, even the more reasonable ones that aren't like the teachers' unions, or are you totally against them on principle?
One of my favorite books is The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. Unions were created at the turn of not this past, but last century, to essentially protect the worker from predatory employers. You didn't want 95-year-old men who couldn't speak English working next to 4-year-old boys in 100-degree heat in the basement that was full to the top of not only a processing product, but a whole bunch of unspeakables. Unions had their purpose. Unfortunately, what we have seen is a complete transition to the power being in the hands of the union bosses. Now, I have no problem with workers demanding to be paid what they deserve. In fact, I think that that's one of the most important things that we can do as Americans. That's capitalism, man. But what I have seen is government unions and also private sector unions forcing people to contribute to political movements that they don't associate with or believe in. And then their own merit, their own individual rights, their ability to rise on their own because of their own capacity, their own mind, their own strengths, it gets tossed by the wayside. And so what I believe in is the strength of the American worker, the independence and the merit of the American worker. I'm not saying that every union situation is toxic. What I am saying is that unions were created to assure that workers got a fair share of the profit. But now we're talking about a century and some ago. And sadly, There are a lot of things that have changed, and union bosses have collected power and tried to abuse it. You look no further than those open records requested emails between WEAC, the teachers' union bosses, and Tony Evers himself, the governor of this state, colluding to lock my children out of their school and countless children across the state, to force masks on our children, to try and push COVID-19 vaccines into the arms of our children, to do these contact quarantines to our children. Now our children are dealing with 2 years of learning loss and an epidemic of anxiety and depression. You tell me how that's okay. This is what happens when union bosses are in power. And my biggest fear in this Republican primary is that Tim Michaels is actually funding some of the very organizations that push unionization on people. You know, Michaels actually took a guy to court because he wasn't joining the union because he didn't believe in what the union wanted to buy with his money. Political speech that he stood against. And I'm sorry, I believe in individual rights and liberties. And I know I'm repeating it ad nauseum on your show this morning, but Joe, I'm going to protect the Constitution. I'm going to protect your family like it was my own. And I want to make sure that the people of Wisconsin are freer, not less free, and that we don't have these single bid contracts and a guy who goes out there and says that there is no waste in the Department of Transportation.
We went long. We got to hit the break quickly. How do they find out more about you online?
RebeccaForGovernor.com.
Easy enough. Thank you very much, Rebecca Clavish. Nikki Haley, thank you for joining us. We'll have to work on that radio career as DJ. You're welcome to try it out here next time around.
I'm going to hold you to it.
We'll be back right after this.
Regular Joe Show.